It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news, maybe a simplification of the laptop line and Renee's suggestions for the iPad line, some great iPad Pro tips and thoughts, and an iPhone SE review from Renee, who's been using it for a while now. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 502, recorded Tuesday, April 12th, 2016. Turtle Wax and Bondo. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Plus, with a Squarespace developer platform, you can customize the code behind any design. Enter the offer code MacBreak and you'll get 10% off. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at Gazelle.com today. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. And the stalwarts are here joining us from Montreal. The man in charge at iMore.com, Renee Ritchie. Great to see you, Renee.
Me okay, Leo. Me ready. Cookies. Yes.
Cookie. Didn't you? All right, we're going to. Now I have to show that. And then Andy Anatko, the jolly chortle in the background from the Chicago Sun-Times and parts east. Yeah, Cookie Monster. So it was a good ad to begin with, but then Apple released the outtakes.
It's totes adorbs, as the kids would say, Leo.
Totes. Totes adorbs. You saw the iPhone 6S ad for the Cookie Monster. Let me show you. Now, I guess these are, I mean, at first I think outtakes, but really there's a real human his hand up the Cookie Monster. And so these are the real human, who is apparently very funny.
Me good. Me ready.
Let's take five.
Siri, you in there?
Hey, Cookie Monster.
You know me. She know me. Me gonna give you a cookie, Siri. Who's saying that? Was that Siri? Is it ready yet? How about now? 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 How about now?
What is that? It's ghost cookie.
I guess when you
watch,
you should see the one with the
Siri. Is this annoying?
Oh. What happened? What happened?
He got hit with slate. Oh. Me okay. Me trooper. Cookie's ready. Cookie's ready. Oh boy. Cookie's ready. Nom.
This is when you're really getting to the character.
Hey, Siri, good night.
Good night.
Maybe we should make it close my eyes.
Oh, man, that's on YouTube. That was not for broadcast.
Look at the artist at work right there.
I know.
John Oliver did like some stuff for Sesame Street, and the outtakes between Cookie Monster and John Oliver are like even three times as funny. I don't know who operates the puppet now, but it's just.
You know,
I would watch an hour long stand up special on Netflix with just Cookie Monster.
Let's find his name. Why don't we know his name? This guy is a genius. I guess Sesame Street doesn't want anybody to know. You know, the kids. Think of the kids.
Well, Elmo took all the spotlight, and poor Cookie Monster.
Yeah, remember there was a whole documentary. What was it? Yeah.
Isn't it interesting though that now the latest wave of Apple commercials, It's there's so almost totally the opposite of what every Apple commercial has been about. It's always been about all hail the product, all, you know, lay down your soul to the product. The product knows everything. And now it really are these funny commercials with really famous people that it shows off the product, certainly. But the commercial with like Apple TV, you could do that with a lot of other products. You could have done that with Alexa. You could have done that with Google TV. And I guess now it's down to let's make a funny 30 seconds or 60 seconds that people are going to want to send to each other.
This, by the way, it's David Rudman. He has been performing as a Cookie Monster since 1985. He's also Baby Bear and Two-Headed Monster.
Which
you may
head?
Have seen me as Baby Bear and Two-Headed Monster. He's gotten any Emmy nomination, but he really should get more than that. That's pretty cool.
That's terrific.
Yeah. Did you see the most recent Apple ad? I thought was a little bit that the other thing is they become mean. We talked about the Taylor Swift falling on her face on the treadmill. And the new Apple TV ad.
Well, it's not like Kobe asked him to play Fantastic Four to really quiet that Michael B. Johnson. Michael B. Jordan down.
Yeah, that's true. He could have hit back a little harder. But I feel like this is kind of trolling Kobe. And I'm not. Apple's never done mean ads. Have they? Well, maybe I'm a Mac. I'm a PC. Okay, those are kind of mean.
How about Lemmings? That was
mean.
That goes back. That goes back a long way.
This is. Let's watch this a little bit. This is. Siri,
open the NBA app.
Here he is over Jackson.
See that?
How good is this kid?
That's the guy you're playing in this movie. Cold-blooded assassin.
Locked in a battle with Father Time.
Exactly. No. What?
Like a hero. On the verge of a steep decline. It's perfect.
There's no decline. It's all ascension.
So what part of you hurts the most?
I don't know.
What does it matter to you?
It's so mean.
Oh, they didn't tell you. I'm playing you all the way through now. I mean, with makeup and prosthetics and stuff like that. Siri, play The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
I do like how they've worked in...
Fast forward 20 minutes and 36 seconds.
Very useful Siri commands, but...
It's kind of apparently Michael Johnson is Rain Man. He knows the index chapters of every movie he's ever
seen.
Yeah,
he knew right where to jump.
This is a follow up to the Alison Brie Game of Thrones guy commercial from a month or so ago.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that one's good too.
It's not your plum.
Is it mean?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit at the end.
Also, that movie trailer is a lot better than any house.
Oh, the kissing one. Yeah, the kissing one. Yeah, we saw that. Yeah, we watched that. New agency, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing a lot of internal agency stuff now, too. But it's also a recognition that it's not just about television advertising anymore, but this stuff has to live on social and has to be shareable on the internet. People have to want, like, just a great commercial, you'll watch it and forget about it. But they want stuff that, you know, to Andy's point, that you share and move around.
Yeah. He just can't figure out, the Kingslayer can't figure out how to kiss.
Is that 25 degrees?
Well, he's busy slaying Kings, Leo. He spends so much time in the day.
Now it's open a little bit. Is there time? Is there a little bit of time?
I think it's the same set, by the way.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Need you on set for the kiss.
Great.
We'll be on in 5. Thank you. Siri, find Game of Thrones.
No. Do you mind open Apple Music?
What are you doing?
Play Jeremiah.
It's not too mean.
The stars are self-effacing, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea, right? Is self-deprecating humor is good.
They're good sports.
Good sports. Yeah, but I mean, Taylor Swift taking a face plant. That almost felt like Apple getting her back.
But okay, no, face plant, but then like continuing to sing and shaking it off.
Yeah, I guess. The Cookie Monster ad is somebody saying Chiat Day. Really interesting. The return. Of course, Chiat Day did the original Mac
ad. And I forget who shared it, but someone said that the views on that were just astronomical compared to the total views previous commercials.
Yeah.
Like some of these new ones are just doing astronomically better than the previous commercials.
Well, that's true.
On social, on YouTube.
Yeah, there'll be some virality to meanness.
Yeah, totally.
No, the Cookie Monster's not mean. It's funny. It's just funny.
Yeah. But it's kind of scary that this really is like how all entertainment is moving.
Yeah.
I'm reading things in like the Hollywood like trade blogs about how they don't really care. The late night wars are not so much about viewership. It's not even so much about demographics. It's about can you create viral content that gets tens of millions of YouTube views? And the idea that the reason why one of the reasons why the Tonight Show does so well is not so much because of the live views or even the DVR views, but the fact that he routinely creates content that's going to get 10, 15, even 20 million views on YouTube over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
It does make wonder, though, how valuable a YouTube view is.
I'll watch Wheel of Impressions, like, you know, over and over again. But people will pay for that stuff. Like, we know people in the YouTube industry who get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars just to do product spots.
I think the real strength, though, is not the YouTube views, but the fact that you can embed that on many different, like on Twitter and Facebook, and get a lot of awareness generated that way. That money can't buy that kind of advertising.
Well, not just that, but you also get a really fine-grained report on who has seen it and who's been reached by that. Whereas even like streaming views, you don't know who was in the room. You don't necessarily get breakdowns by time of day. Netflix, for instance, is so granular. They know they're not only getting ratings isn't quite so important to Netflix. It's not like something because they buy and air a whole 12 episode season at once, but they know the exact moment that people are tuning are changing to something else. And so you kind of got to wonder what happens 5 years from now when even Kevin Spacey gets, we find out that every time there's a wide shot of a desk, people tend to stop and go to something else. So we want fewer desks. We want approval on all of the sets to make sure there aren't so many desks. Can we have a futon in the Oval Office next season?
We are just coming off of the Facebook F8 keynote. I don't know if you guys watched that. I mean, this is, I know, ostensibly an Apple show, but if you're using Facebook, you may well be using it on an Apple platform. I have to say the thing I was waiting to hear about and was most interested in was the bots, although I love, and a lot of kudos to Harry McCracken, who's just killing it lately on Fast Company. He's written a long read about some of the things announced at F8. Of course, he knew about it ahead of time. And then had the chutzpah to put what looks like a waxworks figure of Mark Zuckerberg as the picture. Is that really Mark, or is that his Madame Tussauds Mark? I don't...
No, he's projecting through an Oculus into his Iron Man suit right now.
That is in the great tradition of creepy cover photos. There is something weird there.
I think he switched to a new foundation.
He looks like
Data.
Like Data.
Yeah.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke. That is creepy weird.
His emotion chip's about to engage.
Yeah.
He blinks about as often as real life, too.
So what did you guys think about the bots? Now, this is an area where Apple fell behind, and I think Apple is gonna maybe regret it. Messages, which was the first, I think, SMS app to allow data messaging. And very good because of that, right? You could use it on the desktop. You could use it in instead of using the carrier's expensive SMS all over the world, people use it. But it's Apple only, and they really don't have an open API by any means. I mean, nobody else can really use it.
It's like the early days of BlackBerry where they believe it creates platform stickiness, so they're loath to expand beyond it.
Is that going
to
hurt them?
I mean, like, it hurt BlackBerry. Like, if you can do it really well, if you can maintain a proprietary system for as long as it adds value and then do that switch as soon as you need to, then you get best of both worlds. But what usually happens is the company goes too early and then they lose the underlying business. But, you know, maybe they can create a new software business. Or like BlackBerry, they go way too late and an app like WhatsApp is eating their lunch. So it's a very hard timing thing to nail.
Well, look at, for instance, FaceTime. I don't need FaceTime. I've got video calling built into the Facebook app. Their Facebook app does everything.
Yep.
Plus Google Messenger that does all that sort of stuff and is multi-platform. I think Apple's going to have to rethink this idea of creating great apps that work and services that work great on all Apple devices, because it's certainly easier to use iChat and I'm an old guy, so I will continue to say iChat and iMessage. Well, because
because messages, what is that?
Stop calling things message and stop calling things pages.
Stop calling things photos.
Apple does a lot of things that make things super, super easy to use for the first 3 or 4 weeks, but then becomes a problem after a year when you want things to when you're over the initial hump and you need to make things work a little bit better. I'm kind of now starting to transition away from Apple messaging because it's my phone is a big part of how I message. I have realized that I can get by without it just by simply making sure that when I interact with my friends, I use Messenger instead of the Apple product. They're perfectly happy to use pretty much everything else that's completely interoperable. I think Apple is going to have almost a vice president or a czar of interoperability if they want to keep on going. Because stuff like this, when you can't get Siri on other platforms, and when it's really difficult to integrate Siri with third-party services and apps, and you're trying to compete with a company like Google that does Google Now the way that they had to launch it, but now pretty much any app can now inject stuff onto Google Now and have access to interoperability, it's kind of hard to imagine Apple still keeping up in 2 years if they don't start to open things up a little bit more.
Well, and here's they have lock-in, because if you're going to use SMS on your iPhone, you're going to use Apple's messages.
Yeah, it's first input.
I should point out, on Android, you are not locked in. You can use a large variety of messaging apps, including Facebook Messenger, as your default SMS app. So that means Android users are – I switched over. I thought, well, why not use Messenger? Because then it's all in there.
It depends a lot on your network, too. Like, for example, my sister doesn't have a Facebook account. My mother doesn't have a Facebook account. Right. My father doesn't. Neither of my best friends have Facebook accounts. They all have iPhones, though. So for them, they just use iMessage. They don't even think about it, and Facebook is not an alternative. Right. They don't have WhatsApp. I think one or two of them have a Google account, but none of them use any Google Communications apps. So it really depends, especially in the tech field. That's fine. We all have Facebook accounts. I'll have Twitter DMs. We can pick and choose on a different day every different app we want to use. But out there in the real world, I think there's still a fundamental difference. Some people will go and get a Facebook account, and Facebook is essentially the web to them. They just live on Facebook the way I used to live on CompuServe or AOL. But for other people, they only have a device, and that device just happens to have an iCloud account, but they don't really know or care. It's just their iPhone, and they're device centric, not really web service or web platform centric.
Facebook did something very interesting, though, a while ago, and it didn't get a lot of attention. You don't have to have a Facebook account to use Messenger. Did you know that?
I don't know if anybody knows that.
I don't think anybody knows that. But that is very interesting. So you can use Messenger as a messaging app without having a Facebook account.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Realize that you're looking at three different points of view. Facebook is trying to leverage its success on saying, you don't need the real web, so to speak. We will give you everything you want.
We will give you the web.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. We'll give you private messaging. We'll give you family messaging. We'll give you public news. We will give you entry points into CNN. We will give you funny videos. We will give you news videos. On and on and on. And now with this the stuff they've been talking about today, it's like, we will also give you, do you want to know if your flight is going to be on time? We will give you that information as well. Google's idea is that we will use whatever service you want, be whatever you want, use whatever device you want. Because we've got our tendrils out everywhere, we will allow you to, we will enhance everything you do everywhere. Whereas Apple's point of view seems to be, if we control the experience for you, you will have a much, much better and more secure and more private experience. So I don't think anybody's going to win in the philosophy wars, but each one of them has some interesting positives and some really interesting limitations.
Should Apple consider doing what Facebook is about to do with its Messenger platform, make it be a platform for other developers for other tools? Facebook showed off that you can order flowers.
Yeah, look at the Asian services like Line and WeChat. They've been building platforms and gaming engines on top of them for years, and very lucratively too.
Why hasn't, or should, maybe Apple doesn't want to? Why wouldn't they?
They're a hardware platform.
Everything they do filters into how does this sell more iPhones, or how does this, or actually more to the point, how does this sell the thing that they want to sell in 5 years? The other problem is that I think that they like the elegance of having, here is a thing we have called Siri. That is, you ask it to do something and it will do something for you. But we have this separate app just for messaging. I feel as though stylistically they prefer that kind of point of view.
Although, I think we pointed this out last week, Apple is moving into a realm where it's not just about hardware, that their services are becoming billion-dollar businesses. And it might be about more than just hardware. Certainly, Apple's got to consider that, right?
It's revenue. Their number they were looking at is revenue per customer, which is rising because people are now subscribing to things like Apple Music and doing the program thing. But it's a very careful balance. You don't want to throw out that huge business. You want to carefully transition through that.
But you don't want a strategy tax either. You don't want it to say, oh, we're a hardware company, so we can't do these other things, because that's going to hurt you too, right?
Well, it depends on what it's built on. Like, so if you have a very strong foundation of the hardware, then you can add value through the software. That's really compelling. But a lot of the advice that Apple's getting this week, especially in a lot of the biz pubs, is why don't you stop doing everything that you've done to be successful and start doing everything that has often failed for many, many other companies. And you have to be very careful, because Wall Street will tell you to do all sorts of things that are completely not in your best interest. And Apple's biggest challenge now is migrating so they don't lose that fundamental business model, one of the most lucrative business models of our time. But transitions, like, they didn't stop with iPod when they rolled out iPhone, and yeah, those are very similar businesses, but Apple's always been one of those few companies that did not mistake their products for their business. Like, iPod was not treated like Windows, where it had to be preserved at the cost of every new idea within the company. And now they have to get to a point where they don't mistake them being a hardware company for them being a personal technology company, or they risk the same thing over a longer span of history.
Yeah, they're also in a really enviable position where they have because they're not holding up 90% of all computers on the planet, they can actually move much, much faster. And they can they also have people who are generally using Apple products by everything is a choice. But the people who tend to use Macs are people who have looked at everything else and have specifically chosen this. They haven't settled for this, or they haven't just said, OK, whatever, I need a computer today. So they have the ability to sort of leverage off of that and say, here is the new thing. And we're not going to let you use the old thing, but you're going to like the new thing. And people will usually come on board with them. I'm not a business reporter, and I don't know anything. I can barely figure out how much money my bank is charging me for every ATM withdrawal. But you do look at how much money they make off of every piece of hardware, and you wonder about the discussions that go on inside there of what happens if we are no longer able to make those kind of margins on hardware. What happens when we do have to try to make $200 or $300 a year off of each individual user? How do we go about doing that?
Always a challenge. It's the innovator's dilemma. You want to move into the next thing without cannibalizing the last thing. And very difficult to do.
And a sacrifice is, like, if you try to maximize profit on one of your old product lines, you often ride it into the ground and don't have anything to follow it up with. But if you abandon it early, you do leave money on the table. And it's no guarantee you'll ramp up the next thing. So all these things are great challenges.
More often failure than success in this. And
most companies don't transition well.
Most companies don't do it. Yeah, they can't do it. It's a difficult thing. And this is the kind of the crux that a lot of the mainline tech companies are in right now. They're of an age where they have to make this kind of paradigm shift.
And Apple, even Google looks old compared to some of the new web companies.
No, that's exactly right. It's Google. You know, what's interesting is Amazon. I keep thinking about Amazon and how they are. They had some huge failures, Fire Phone most notably. But then you look at the Echo, and of all of the other companies challenging Facebook's dominance in messaging, only the Echo seems to have anything going for it, and primarily because it's just a different UI. It's not on the phone. It's a voice UI, a place where nobody else lives. They own that.
True, but although that's aimed at their primary established market, where Facebook is aiming a lot of effort on emerging markets and getting the internet into places where they hope there'll be significant demand in 10 years from
that's
now.
That's true. That was a big point of that speech, wasn't it? Is we're looking at where we're going to be 10 years from now. And unlike Amazon, which is very much U.S.-centric, Facebook is very, very much a global company.
Apple, too. I mean, it's uncertain what Amazon could do in China, for example, where there are established Chinese internet brands and retail brands. And Apple and Facebook and other companies are investing heavily in those areas and in India. And that is going to be incredibly important as those markets become bigger and bigger and the middle class grows and grows.
But they're also hedging their bets by being not just selling services to consumers, but selling services to people who sell things to consumers. Their back end stuff for storage and basically CPU power and apps that you can write and then host on their servers and use their firepower in order to deliver. That's a huge, huge.
Everybody
business
uses.
Not all about,
even yeah, Google exactly. uses
so,
it.
Yeah, it's like they're it's a little bit like it's okay to sell if one company wants to sell light bulbs, that's great, but it's better to be the company that sells the electricity, because that's your future proof against people coming up with something better than light bulbs.
Let's take a break. This is Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, a great place to go. My favorite bookstore is an audio bookstore. I would say now more than 200,000 titles of. It's not just fiction and nonfiction, but it's performances, lectures, the great courses. To me, this was a huge thing when Audible acquired the entire Great Courses library. These are the best college courses, the best college lecturers, and you can listen and learn. I like to mix my Audible experience up. I alternate fiction and nonfiction. I alternate entertainment with learning, and it's worked out quite well. Andy, you have an Audible pick this week. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, I was glad there's an Audible ad today, because just yesterday I bought this book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing.
Love it.
Which I had not even heard of before, but...
you don't know KonMari?
I did not know. Well, okay, if I turn this camera around, you would know. Andy Iannocco cannot pronounce KonMari. But it's particularly good because as I said before, when we're talking about Audible, I often use it on my Amazon Echo while I'm cleaning and tidying up. I'll be listening to a book while I'm like washing the dishes or mopping the floors and stuff like this. And so I did clean the kitchen last night about an hour after buying it. And I really like it a lot. It's like a lot of these, like, here's how to organize and clean up. But it takes more of a Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance sort of view towards it. Like saying, it's full of practical tips. Like one of the ones that really kind of hit home was, instead of like going space by space, try to think about, I'm going to get all of my clothes. I'm just going to focus on clothes today. I'm just going to get all my clothes together and process all of them. But it also like has things that you got to kind of see. I stop with a mop and just sort of listen. So did she really say to thank the soul of this t-shirt for the service that it did to me in my life and then release it? Like, I'm not sure if I want to do that to an old Macworld Expo t-shirt from 2003, but I do take the point. So it's really interesting to listen to. Even when you're thinking this is kind of nuts, you're at least gets you to think about why you might think it's nuts. Because I subscribe, sometimes I get a little behind on spending my credits. So I'll have like two, three credits like available to me for books that I can get, and I'll get the two that I really really wanted, and then I'll just take a flutter on something, and this is the one I took a flutter on. I'm just really happy with it.
Awesome. The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Marie Kondo, the author. The technique is KonMari. She's been promising an iOS app for some time now, and it was supposed to be out by now to
help
you
do this. It's very much the getting things done of...
Like, it is.
GTD becomes like almost like a cult in a positive way, like a cult and a lifestyle and something that people evangelize. I'm finding that KonMari is, I was only the pink mop, and then I finally got my green mop last week.
I read the book, I got the rules down, and I haven't pulled the trigger. I just like, I have some trepidation, I think, about...
It is because she makes it, it's so much, it's, just the introduction is so fun to listen to because she talks about all the seminars that she gives and the stories that she's collected, and she reads one letter from someone who said, not only, it got me to think about so much about my relationship to everything in my world that I got a divorce after finishing decluttering.
Yes.
Because I decided that...
My husband doesn't spark joy. He's gone, and you thank him for his service, and then you let him go. Hey, I want to mention, so this is one of the books. You're going to get a free book, so go to audible.com/MacBreak. You're going to sign up for the gold account. That's a book a month, and then you can cancel anytime in the first 30 days. There's a new Hamilton, the book about Hamilton, the musical. So pick a book. You'll get to keep it even if you cancel in the first 30 days, but you pay nothing. But you're not going to want to cancel. And I want to encourage you, if you're an Audible listener, to download the Audible app because they have now added channels. This is something new for Audible, and I want to get on some of these channels. They have some of our content on Audible, but I would like to see more. If you open the app, you'll see channels, check out channels, and it's a ton of additional content that's absolutely free. It's just part of the app. So even if you only get one book, there is a lot of stuff you can listen to. And it's not just books, although there are books in here. There are podcasts. There are lectures. There's news from the New York Times. This is just a category called Stories Worth Sharing. You can you could just start listening. There's comedy on here. There's science. They've done, I think, a really interesting thing here by adding these new channels. It's in. They say it's in beta, but you can add it if you have the Audible app on iOS or Android. And suddenly, there's a lot more in store for you. Audible, and that's free, by the way. Audible.com. There's some of my books. You can see excerpts from the Encyclopedia Britannica. That's fascinating. A lot of these books, Andy, you might notice, are your recommendations. Almost all of them. There it is, Marie Kondo. Audible.com/MacBreak. Your first one's free. Like pushers everywhere. We're happy to say it. Let's talk a little bit about Text Expander. Wasn't a Text Expander your pick, Renee, last week? I think it was.
Well, it wasn't a pick. It was a discussion of the pricing change.
So they announced that they were no longer going to just allow you to buy Text Expander outright, that they were going to charge a monthly fee. And there was quite a lot of pushback from people. A lot of users said, is it worth it? So they have modified a little bit their stance on this. If you go to smilesoftware.com/textexpander, you can see Greg Scown's blog post from April 12th. They're now going to apply a lifetime discount of 50% off the, they call it life hacker pricing. If you were a previous customer, which includes me, that's about $20 a year U.S. They were offering it only for the first year. That was a mistake. We value our long-term customers. It's important for us to demonstrate in our actions. Thanks for bearing with us as we sorted this out. So it's still a subscription, but if you are an existing customer, it won't be as much. I have to think this is not merely because of conversation, but I have to think there may also have been a lack of adoption.
Not a lot of buy-in, especially for people who weren't enterprise or other high power, not high power, but people who really valued it for business uses and could justify the cost and the syncing and the team functionality.
This is only a week after announcing it. They've pulled back a little bit.
It's the same thing. I mean, again, we all used to pay a lot of money for software, but back then there wasn't a lot of software and we didn't buy a lot of software. I mean, relatively speaking, if you have a $50, $100, $200, $300 app, maybe you get one or two or three or four, five or six of those, but you don't get 60, you don't get 600 of them. And we live in an age where most people now do get 60 or 600 apps or more every year. And it changes incredibly the value proposition of software for everybody.
Plus, you have this really... pricing on leasing a piece of software is intangible, and I think that people can easily be affected by they can't compare it to stuff they used to buy as a kid. They have to compare it to what they're buying right now. And $5 a month was kind of tough. That's because when you compare it to, for instance, I get Photoshop and Adobe Lightroom plus all of their mobile apps for something like $10 a month because I've subscribed to the photographer package. And it does a lot more than Text Expander does. And so...
I'm happy to pay $10 a month for the photographer subscription. I agree
with
that.
Even Office 365 for a lot of people is very affordable.
The Lifehacker account is, if without the discount, $3.33 a month if you pay for a year. So I think it might have been better to say, and others have done this, Overcast kind of does something else, but... it might have been better to say, hey, the cost of you get it for a year for $36 or something.
Well, the greater issue is they took away the Dropbox and the iCloud sync, so you had to basically buy into this new service. You couldn't use it the way that you used to.
Can you use the old version and still?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't have to upgrade.
No, but I mean, like, how long can they really legitimately sustain the older versions of those products, too? Like, at some point, this will be the new normal for them,
right?
Unless they change it again.
I don't blame them for trying. and the market will let them know if that's something they're willing to do. You don't know what the value is of your product until you try it.
Yeah, and I think that this might be an indicator. As a consumer, I personally have always responded well to where we have a single-digit update to the app that adds significant features, and we're not making it a free upgrade from the last one. We're going to charge you $15. The new version of this Twitter client is now going to cost $15. The last one you bought was a year and a half ago. I'm okay with spending that because, again, I tend to translate that into other things that I tend to buy. And I will spend $15 on a movie. I'll spend $15 on an album that I really, really like. And particularly if I'm grateful to a piece of software for making my life easier, I'm kind of happy to pay it. It's just this, oddly enough, at the end of the month when I'm looking through my credit card statement every single month, I'm looking at all the things I'm paying by the month for all these different services. It's the reason why I subscribe to the New York Times, but I don't subscribe to the digital Wall Street Journal. Even though the Wall Street Journal is excellent, I just feel as though I can't buy two. It really does face me that I'm spending $10 a month extra for something that kind of duplicates this other thing that I have. So.
Yeah, it's like cable unbundling. Everybody wants to be able to pick their own channel, but then suddenly HBO is $10 and, you know, Showcase is $10 and it adds up to a lot of money. And like, I'm only getting 3 channels for the amount I used to get 50 channels for. In my article I wrote a few weeks ago, I was likening it to the market for wooden toys where, yeah, there's still a thriving market, but for very few people at a very specific price point. And I think apps are going to be like that. We're in the era of pop apps. And if you want to have an app that's higher priced, it's going to be an incredible niche area. Not everyone, just because you make a great app is not going to be enough anymore. There's got to be a lot of other factors into it.
Well, the market votes. Yeah. And, you know, that's business. That's why I give away what we do. That's exactly what it's worth. It's free. Let's talk about, I don't even know where to start. The FBI. By the way, okay. A couple of interesting data points here. The FBI, of course, you know, the whole thing about suing Apple and getting them done, pack the iPhone. The FBI has also admitted that an unknown hacker group has had access to their servers now for a decade.
For shrug long.
For, we don't know, quite a while. That just is an interesting data point because, of course, it's the FBI who's saying, oh, just give us the keys to your encryption. We'll protect them.
Give us the source code and we'll hack it for you.
Wait a minute. There's somebody in your servers and they've been there for a long time and you don't know who and you haven't gotten rid of them? The director of the FBI, James Comey, told the world, oh, yeah, I have a piece of tape over the camera on my laptop. And why? I saw somebody who was really smart do it. This does not inspire confidence.
No, no, please no. Have him sit down.
Oh, my God. Okay. They have announced officially the hack that they used on the 5C does not work on 5S or later. And apparently now the FBI, the Apple has decided not to kind of go to court and get them to reveal this security flaw. Maybe they don't have to now that they know it's kind of limited. And according to the National Journal, they've been briefing the Congress, particularly Richard Burr, we know and love as the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee and the author of the fabulous Burr-Feinstein anti-encryption bill. And
a finer cryptographic mind you'd be hard-pressed to find.
Hard-pressed to find. A brilliant guy. And Dianne Feinstein, who is his... unaccountably, the senator from California and his co-sponsor on this bill. Anyway, they're getting briefed on exactly how the FBI cracked the phone. I'm sure the conversation is something like, well, you know how a phone has a data? Oh, Lord.
See the world as a system of ones and zeros.
Yes. I would love to be a fly on the wall of that briefing.
Gave it to my son. He used Pengu and went right into it.
So apparently, according to the FBI, they told USA Today the attack has not been successfully deployed anywhere else, even though they did send out an email to all the other law enforcement agencies in the U.S. saying, if you need a hand.
Okay, hacker groups, here's the exploit we use. Are any others of you using this exploit? It's this one with this bit of code. Are you using it? No? Okay, that's good. That's fine. We're fine, guys. Oh, Lord.
And then, of course, if you go to the EFF.org, which I encourage you to do, there is a California assembly bill that suggests that nobody should be allowed to sell AB 1681, that nobody should be allowed to sell a smartphone in the state of California if they do not undermine its basic security features first. And, of course, if you go to EFF.org/action, you can sign the petition. And, by the way, while you're emailing your Congress critter, actually, don't email. You should snail mail or call. You might mention that even though Bernd Feinstein is not yet a bill, they just circulated a draft for discussion, that you don't like that idea either. Bill, this is a I love the Wired. Wired magazine interviewed a security expert who called it ludicrous, dangerous, and technically illiterate. This is not the final. So, but now's the time to weigh in. The bill would not, they're being very specific. They're saying, well, not prescribing what you should do or how you should do this, but, quote, to uphold the rule of law and protect the security and interests of the United States, all persons receiving an unauthorized judicial order for information or data must provide, in a timely manner, responsive and intelligible, i.e. unencrypted, information or data, or appropriate technical assistance to obtain such information or data. They say this is a performance standard. You have to provide this stuff, but we're not going to tell you how to do it. Oh, and by the way, it's not limited just to companies that are making software or hardware. It also applies to licensed distributors. All products, services, or applications they distribute must provide the same easy access. That means Apple's App Store, Google's Play Store, Windows Store all have to vet every app to make sure that there's no strong encryption on it.
Is the name of this the Chinese Intelligence Transparency Act?
Holy cow. No, it's got the worst. The name kind of tells it all. It's the Compliance with Court Orders Act of 2016.
I'm an alderman in North Carolina, and I want GPS data to make sure that person went to the right restroom.
There's a good example. There's a really good example that could be used that way. Because, by the way, the court could be any court.
It doesn't have to be a court.
It says court orders, but you know what? Any government official.
The Burgermeister of Backwood County.
This is why we need almost constitutional guidance on that fundamental principle, because laws like this are going to be put into play without it, unless there's almost an amendment, maybe even an amendment to the Constitution that says here is the definition of the rights of privacy of every individual citizen. What that should be, I'm not going to say. But until there's something at that level that can inform every single law that comes out from the top down, we're going to see lawmakers try to get stuff like this into play. And the biggest problem with this, isn't just the absurdity of this actual text, but also the idea that it's often the thin end of the wedge, that different agencies can then say, well, if this is true, if we've made this statement that it is lawful for us to demand access to this, then we can sort of cite the same principle in order to try to demand that in this one specific case, we can do something that has never been lawful for us to do without a warrant. And then that becomes the way that things are going from day to day. And this is very much a worst case scenario, but the worst case scenario here is pretty darn bad. So we have to really be aware of how bad it will be to leave that barn door open.
Well, how about this one? This is a new proposed bill, Evans Law in New York State. The drivers involved in accidents would be required to submit their phone to the law enforcement for roadside testing, with something Cellebrite has developed called the Textalizer to determine whether they were using the mobile phone to text before the crash.
What if they were flipping stations on a music app? That's fine. They get away with it scot-free. That's why I really dislike these laws, because they come across and they say texting is bad, and absolutely it's bad, but there's no distracted driver law. It's an anti-texting law. You can eat a sandwich while reading a newspaper and driving 60 miles an hour on a highway. No technical law are you breaking, but if you text even while stopped at the side of the road, you can get a fine. We don't always legislate in a sane way.
Yeah, so they also legislate the famous piece of largest piece of artwork, I think, in the world, is the painting that went onto the Boston natural gas tanks on I-93 near when you were entering Boston. This beautiful, I can't remember, 1919, they painted these tanks with this beautiful piece of artwork. Should they force that facility to be painted gray because that painting is also a distraction? But that's me. We're laughing. But this is, first of all, this has been happening for a long, long time, where someone might you get pulled over for whatever reason, and a police officer says, "Can I look at your phone?" And someone will just, it's a police officer, so you hand over the phone. What you don't know is that the fact that you said, "Yes, you can look at my phone," look can mean I can take this into the car and plug something into the USB port that you don't know that I have, that will take all of your contacts and take all of your information because you said I can look at your phone. And then if you want to challenge that, you can challenge that in court later on. But you have essentially given this person permission to take a look inside your phone. But this, when he says that it is now illegal to not hand over your phone if you are asked, this is, the skinny end of the wedge. If you later on, someone could make the statement that if we have proven that we have the right to take a look at your phone to look for evidence that you might have committed a crime during this traffic stop, we pulled you over something illegal, like we don't feel as though that left taillight is actually dim, we feel as though that taillight is actually out, that's super, super dangerous. That's really like that's one step short of knocking from door to door and demanding access to people's homes because they smelled marijuana someplace nearby and they think that's evidence that you might have a grow facility.
It happens
going
all
on.
The time, by the way.
Yeah.
as somebody who lives in a former grow facility, this is the Boston swash you were talking about. That's distracting.
Yeah, and people say that you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to worry about with these laws. But that is always the rallying cry of a totalitarian regime. We're always one step away from a dictatorship when you start invoking those words.
EFF.org/action. If you don't weigh in on this stuff, you don't have a right to complain about it. Okay. By the way, where's my new MacBook?
WWDC.
Really? June?
I think so. I mean, I hope so. I mean, people are all down on Intel now because they're going TikTok instead of TikTok. But I just want those chips to be good.
Did you read Ben Lovejoy's opinion piece in 9 to 5 Mac?
Not yet.
Here's what I do to rationalize Apple's MacBook lineup. Remember Steve Jobs' famous quadrant where he came in after John Sculley had released 8,000 new SKUs and said, no. There's four. There's home, there's office, there's portable, there's desktop. Currently, Apple offers two MacBooks, four MacBook Airs, and six MacBook Pros, 12 models. And then you can, of course, customize them further. Ben says, we can make this a little bit simpler. So let me see if I can find his...
I tried that with the iPad this week, and it's always easy for us to play backstream quarterback to Apple. But even during Steve Jobs' time, you could get different CPU configurations, different memory configurations.
Yeah,
they had a black MacBook,
so much
a white
that.
MacBook.
I think that's okay, right? I mean, but I also, think, you know, but here's what he suggests. See what you think. Extra entry-level 12-inch MacBook. Executive spec, more expensive but more powerful 12-inch MacBook. A decent 14-inch Pro. A better 14-inch Pro. A good 16-inch, which is a new model, MacBook Pro, and a better 16-inch MacBook Pro. So six models. The Air is basically replaced by the MacBook. Mm-hmm. You'd have instead of a 13 and a 15 MacBook Pro, you'd have a 14 and a 16. I think that maybe time has come. I don't know. Then you'd have 12, 14, and 16. It'd kind of be a logical division. They'd all be Retina, right? I don't think this is a bad idea. In fact, I think Apple may be moving in this direction. There's really some question about what role does a MacBook Air play in today's MacBook line?
It fills the $800 price point, which a MacBook can't fill yet. So that's always when the future is coming. Like the original MacBook Air was super expensive, so they kept around the plastic white MacBook for as long as they did, then replaced that with the interim MacBook Pro, the MacBook that became the Pro. But that's the thing with this. Like, I would be tempted to go 12-inch MacBook, 14-inch MacBook, and then Pro versions of those. I mean, I don't know if you have to go to 16. Maybe you do, but there are some people who just... We need to get to a point where with iPad and with MacBook, where you're identifying the use cases, and you're going to have people for whom the portability is a major use case, and some people for whom power is a major use case. And then you're just giving them a choice of screen sizes and maybe speeds and memory allocations and things like that. But once you get to those price points, all those units cost a certain amount of money, and that's fine. They fill those slots. And then you're like, oh, darn, we don't have anything entry level, so we got to keep this thing around. It's why we have the iPad 2 on the iPad lineup, because we need an $800, $900 point of entry machine. And then, well, you know, we still have people who want discrete graphics cards. We got to keep this old thing around because they really do need. And then it's the bargaining, Leo. It's
yeah,
the bargaining
you're stage. Right. Oh, it's yeah, that's what happens.
But you got to remember that when Jobs made that little grid, that was when Apple just didn't have the ability to make more than four products at once. Now they are the biggest tech company in the world, particularly in terms of manufacturing, so they can make as much as they want. I also think that good, better, best as a model made a lot more sense when we were always talking about good, but when there really was just one kind of computer, and that's kind of when we all started talking about that. I think that I think that's both of those sort of lines of thinking are out of date, certainly for the new Apple. I've always had sort of the thought that Apple, if there is any vestige of good, better, best left, now the iPad Pro is the good computer, not just the good iPad, but it fulfills the role that a $900 laptop used to fulfill just 5 years ago. And this is the way that they explain to people that we do have $500, $600 computers, just as you can get $500 or $600 computers with Windows. I'm not sure if the MacBook Air as a name has a whole lot of meaning anymore, because they've dumbed down the MacBook enough that there's just not much difference between what a MacBook and a MacBook Air can do. It's certainly in terms of connectivity. There is not a whole lot of difference between what it's going to do in mobility, given that you have the MacBook nothing. Again, once again, call words have meaning. Call a thing a thing.
But if you had MacBook and MacBook Pro, wouldn't that would be enough?
MacBook, that would be enough. MacBook now, Pro. Now the MacBook is the super, super slim device for people who are willing to sacrifice, who really do want something as light and as slim as possible. And eventually they'll get it down to the $900 price point that I think they really do need to have somewhere inside the portable Macintosh line. I would actually be kind of surprised if they still had a MacBook Air just 2 or 3 years from now, because it used to be you can tell a really big story by saying, oh, we're calling it the Air. This was so thin and light. There's really nothing else we could call it. And now that really is one out of every four laptops of every manufacturer has that kind of slimness and that kind of weight.
The least expensive laptop from Apple is $899. It's an 11-inch Air, which is really dinky.
Yeah, especially with that non-retina screen. I could never get into that 11-inch screen.
It scratches your retina. They bleed. It's just horrible.
By the way, he took a poll at the end of it, with 3,510 votes, 80% say yeah, that's the way it should be.
Apple, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. And again, I made the same attempt with the iPad line, and I don't know if I was successful either. But it's that next 10 words thing from The West Wing, where it's too complicated. You think it's too complicated. I think it's too complicated. I'm sure a lot of marketing people at Apple think it's too complicated. But once you actually have to sell the products,
right. You
have that grim specter of reality staring at you. And it's like, we can't get rid of this yet. You have dependencies.
It'd be hard for me to let go of the Air. The Air is essentially a MacBook with connectors. Right,
a worse screen.
With ports, yeah. But what you want is the retina display.
Yeah, and the MacBook. I mean, the MacBook is expensive, but the technology in there is expensive technology. Right. And like with the original Air, it takes a while for that to filter down to mass market.
And we should also point out that Apple's share of the PC market continues to grow. The PC market's dying, decline of 11.5% from last year in sales, but the Apple market is not as far from dying. Apple's market share worldwide is now 7.4%. Macintosh has 13% of the market in the United States, making it the number four PC manufacturer. So everybody else really is dying.
Well, people get confused by this too. It's like they think that people are throwing out their computers, and they're not. It's just not they're buying keeping new their ones. Computers. Yeah. Yeah, the computers are fine. They do all their work. Increasingly, people are replacing some PCs with Apple laptops, which is why Apple's share is growing. But overall, the PC market, we've got stuff that we can email and use the web with. Most of us are fine.
Yeah. Also, remember that you can never forget that Apple is the only manufacturer of macOS and iOS devices. So every time they come out with a new MacBook, it's a really significant product. And when they decide to go for a new case design or they decide to suddenly make it available in rose gold, that's now every single Mac user, every single user of every Mac is thinking about maybe it's time for me to buy a brand new Mac. Whereas you can hold on to a Windows notebook for as long as you want. There are people, remember that Microsoft actually had to say, look, we're serious this time. Don't make us come to your house and smash your Windows XP devices with an axe. It's been 10 years. We are not going to support it anymore. It's terrible. It's dangerous. Please upgrade to a Windows 7 machine. And a lot of people are still saying, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It works. Yeah, it's a discussion of alliance on Windows XP. Please to give it up. Please.
Yeah.
All the psychologists in the
world. How about Apple Watch? There's been, again, the resurgence of these articles saying the Apple Watch is a bust.
The iPhone is a bust, Leo. It's got no apps. I mean, you can't really use it with anything. I have a BlackBerry. I can use my keyboard shortcuts so much faster. I don't think this iPhone is going. People are nuts at this $600 to buy one. It's just not going anywhere, Leo. It's DOA.
How many do we think have they sold? I mean, they've sold millions, right?
Yeah,
double digit millions. I can't call that a bust. I'm maybe one of the first people to say it was a flop, but I didn't mean flop in terms of market. I meant flop in terms of. It didn't do for me, at least, what I would have liked it to do. Rumor now that we will see a new Apple Watch sooner than later, like the summertime. And here's one, I don't know. Is it thinner? They say a lot thinner.
That's so, I mean, like, it depends whose rumors you're parsing, but it looks like we're going to get an internal update. So, like, an Apple S2 computer on a chip, but not a new casing, similar to how they do the S, like, you know, iPhone 6, iPhone 6S, iPhone 5, iPhone 5S, and then a redesign would come later. And there's been a lot of pushback that Apple has to stop doing the S models. But it's not as though Apple has, like, an iPhone 8 or an Apple Watch 3 just ready, and they're withholding this technology, like the 4 from some Warren Ellis planetary novel. They release the stuff as fast as it's ready, and keeping the same casing means that their processor teams have a known thermal target, a known package size, and they can accelerate the processors faster than they otherwise might. So the Apple Watch will get that update, will get that better processor, but it's going to be a slow march, the same way we went from iPhone to 3G to 3GS to 4 to 4S. We'll go through the Apple Watch, and then in a few years we'll be amazed at how fast we progress in such little time.
Yeah, I believe that Apple really wanted to make sure they wouldn't have to change a new case for a long time, or at least long time relative to case designs for Apple. Remember that the iPhone basically held the same shape and the same form factor for the first two versions, even though the internals of the iPhone 2 were radically different. And then also, this is different because it's not just making people buy brand new cases and car docks. A lot of people have been spending a lot of hundreds of dollars on really fancy watch straps. Some people that I know are really, really eager to always buy the new straps, and you wonder how much thinner they can make the current Apple Watch and still make it compatible with those lugs. There seems to be plenty of thickness to go around, but is there enough thickness to make sure that the capture is good and your $500 or $900 or even $20,000 bauble is not going to go flying off when you go jogging?
It does not seem credible that 40% thinner. The battery life would take such a hit.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. That'd be a surprise. All I can say is that would be a surprise to me and would run counter to what I've been hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like every time you read any of these, what I want in the next iPhone, even from famous people, it's like, delete the bezels, make it half as thin, twice as long battery life, and all these other things that, like, and they think Apple's just being mean when really physics is looking at them pointing and laughing. And there's constraints there. If you want a longer battery life, you're not going to get much thinner. If you want much thinner, you're not going to get a longer battery life. You have to start, there's an opportunity cost to all these things.
Yeah, Renee said something that was super, super important too. Every time they make a change to the case, so many different departments have to sign off on that because it affects so many different organizations. If you understood that for one design of not necessarily the iPhone, but for one phone, they wanted to make a what seemed like a simple cosmetic change to the case design, And then I was talking to some engineers about how that filtered up and down, and they decided that we're going to have to underclock the CPU by X percent just to make sure it will still be within the tolerances that we have designed for this hardware slab. And it was just all you want to do is, again, make – I'm not at liberty to say, so I don't want to give any hints. But it was just a very, very simple, non-radical redesign. It was like, no, we don't – we ran through the model, and we feel as though we would have to undercut the performance of our current hardware just to make it look the way that you guys want to make it look.
Yeah. Now, I think it's public knowledge that the S1 and the current Apple Watch runs at its thermal limits. I mean, they're not dealing with a lot of space in that thing as it is.
Renee also simplified the iPad product line for us. Thank you, Renee. And you, at least, stuck to the quadrant model. Consumer and professional, big and small.
I tried big and small. Even Gartenberg hassled me about that because those are really terrible words. But and then I started thinking about it as I went through the article. And I love – one of the reasons I like writing is because it solves problems for me. Like it evolves my thinking as I write.
Right. That's why I want to write more, because I agree with you. That's a very – it's a rigorous thought process.
Totally. So I started with that one. And when I got to the end, I realized that here I had the difference being whether you had the smart connector and the pencil or not. But I realized pretty soon all of them are going to have smart connectors and pencils. And it's really just going to be like you buy as much iPad as you need. And then you have a keyboard option and a pencil option. And it's not really a quadrant anymore. iPad is one product. It's what Apple believes is the future of their computing. And you literally just get you ask them to slice off as much of it as you need.
Small, medium, or large. And I think you're right. I think this is clearly the way. And I have to say, the pencil is such a success that you're going to want a pencil on everything.
It's so great.
And I have to say, and I don't know how this would work on a mini. I think it might be too small on the mini. But the keyboard is fine on the iPad Pro Junior.
Oh, did you see Jim Lee drawing on the iPad Pro?
Yeah, I was gonna say he just got a new 9.7-inch iPad Pro. So he starts posting pictures of Wonder Woman drawn in Procreate, and it's like it's Jim freaking Lee, truly one of the greatest comic book illustrators of the last 50 years. And it's like, oh, so that's what's capable of being done. Apple needs to throw some money at Jim Lee to simply say, will you please just do, here's $50,000 a month, just do one drawing, capture the video, and let us post it to YouTube. We will sell so many of these damn things.
Yeah. Instagram.com/JimLeeArt. He has the Joker, Batman, and Wonder Woman up.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Somebody has to tell Jim that Procreate has this feature built in where you just play back the animation. You don't have to do this over-the-shoulder video.
He's on that too.
Yeah, okay.
He's posted the actual captures.
Yeah. It is really fun to watch. And he's not using a pencil, I might point out. This is his finger.
He did a bunch of them with the pencil.
Let me see if I can find the pencil ones, because maybe this is older.
Instagram.com/JimLeeArt.
Okay.
Yeah. He did the Wonder Woman, I think, with a pencil.
I have to think that everybody who's an illustrator has got to be very excited about this, right?
Yes, in the same way. I have a lot of illustrators who are friends, and I've been talking to them about it. And the overall vibe that I seem to get from them as a community is that it's like what musicians think of GarageBand is, where it's not the sort of thing where they would do the finished thing with it because their workflow and also their publishing needs are too tied into Photoshop for that. But it's perfectly fine for doing a layout sketch. It's perfectly fine for I've got some ideas I need to lay down, and not just simple scratchings on a piece of paper, but something I can actually use as a put into my workflow later on. People are still bigger fans of the Surface Pro for stuff like that, because it gives them some of them think that's a little bit more responsive. I can't speak to that, but it does allow them to use all the tools that they're using day to day. And it's just as simple as not being able to run the apps that they are used to running.
If you'd pull this up for me, Jason, I'll show it. Yeah. So this is Wonder Woman on Jim Lee Art, the Instagram. It almost looks like he's losing his thumb. I'm sorry. Those are pretty big lines.
this is a guy who he's been drawing for 30 or 40 years. This is his first time with Procreate.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. And isn't it amazing when you see I go to Comic Cons a lot, and I just watch these people draw, and they'll do commissions at their tables. And it's just like, you're just drawing that stuff. You're not starting with a photo that looks like that and tracing over it. That's coming out of your head. What happened to you?
Talent's kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's magical.
Comes out good. And, he's taking advantage of Instagram's new 60-second video, which, thank goodness, right? I was worried we were going to see 15 seconds of this.
One where there's a Joker. If you do the load more, there'll be the Joker and Batman below
Okay, let me see the Joker. Oh, that looks pretty scary. He's still using a pen and paper, I notice.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And he's not giving that up.
He's the co-publisher of DC Comics, and he's still just drawing. Yeah. The stuff he posts to his accounts that are just full page Catwoman, full page Batman. You're just like, this isn't just one piece of art. It's not a story, but I just want to stare at this for 3 hours.
He says on his post, still prefer working on canvas or paper, but painting on a plane is a lot easier with tools like these. He was just on a plane with his iPad Pro. He thought, well, let me just pull it out and see what I can do here. What I like about digital work is the ability to keep exploring, so I use it as a learning tool. So at least for Jim Lee, this isn't a final. But I imagine younger and artists, up-and-coming artists, are probably very – I mean, why would they use pen and paper? I mean
– yeah, that's where all the workflows are. So now all the artwork is being transmitted digitally. I know one illustrator that – It's hysterically funny. The only time that he does freelance work for a number of different books, and the only one of the few that he does where he will actually do like actual art on paper still is for the My Little Pony licensed comics, because it's because the My Little Pony fans will pay amazing amounts of money for original published art, and of course there's no original published, there's no original like hand drawn art like on paper that you can give them from a digital file. So he will actually, I think he draws it digitally, prints it out in blue ink on illustration paper, and then does the finishes on that board just so he'll have something he can sell for boku bucks.
Somebody like Jim Lee is so used to the tactile feel of paper and the scratch and of the charcoal or the pastel or the pen. It would feel, I'm sure, very weird for somebody who grew up with pen and paper to start drawing on glass. But if this is all you've ever known.
Also, it's how you the incredible stuff that happens is when you have people who grow up learning to use these tools where they've never really picked up a pen with ink on it. I've been doing life drawing classes or life drawing sessions with the iPad Pro. And it's been wonderful, partly because I never really made any headway until I decided to forget about all the technique that I've been learning or trying to learn since I was in college and just simply started what is unique about the iPad Pro and Procreate. And one of the difficulties is that the model will start off with like 5 minute poses, then 10 minute poses. And then by the end of the 3 hour session, he or she is doing like 30 minute poses. And it's so hard to like get the entire figure in if you're not talented or not experienced like I am. And so I realized that, wait a minute, I can draw on layers here. And so I developed this technique where I will just simply, layer one is I will draw a blob that represents every place in this screen that there should be something drawn. And then I will create a layer on top of that that's a light color that is now here is vaguely, not even a stick figure, here's vaguely what the shape of this body is. And then I will add like another layer on top of that. It's like turning a lens and putting it to sharper focus with every layer until I get to the last layer I'm working on is actually like black inks that are putting in details. And now I'm actually finishing some sort of sketch for every one of these poses. And it was only because I was using these digital tools that were not even remotely available to me when I first started learning how to draw in high school. So that's when I'm going to be amazed by artists who the first thing they ever picked up was a phone. The first thing they ever picked up was a Wacom tablet. Yeah.
And you have to think that the animation that Procreate does, and this is not new. I mean, other tools have allowed you to.
You get to see how it
works.
That's
got to be so educational.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how they make the eyes.
Exactly. When you get to go to an art museum and you look really close, you can see where the brush strokes are. Yeah. And that's like, oh, I thought that you would have started with it. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But imagine watching. I mean, wouldn't you love to watch Van Gogh paint, Starry Night from the first strokes to the last in animation? What an education that would be.
A lot of those artists drunk, so that maybe you don't want to. You don't want to be there when Jackson Pollock was drawing.
What do Zeus, Medusa, Pegasus, Athena, and Titan have in common? We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, a word about Squarespace, the place to make your next website. Squarespace makes it easy to set your website apart and create a beautiful, professional website. Cover page, portfolio, blog, online store. It all comes with your Squarespace website.
because you're starting with the templates designed not only by the best designers in the world, but the best engineers in the world. So every Squarespace site starts looking gorgeous, and then you put your own unique stamp and aesthetic on it, and that's easy to do. You don't need to be a coder. It's just point and click, drag and drop, and make it your own. Squarespace sites do not look cookie cutter. They all look unique. But underneath the hood, you've got things like mobile responsive design, so you don't need a separate mobile site. The site looks great no matter what size screen you use. Every site has e-commerce and really good e-commerce built in. Now, if you are a developer, I don't like talking about this too much because I don't want to scare away people who aren't developers. But if you are a developer, they have an amazing platform. And you know what? Lisa's working on her new site for our agency, Artisanal. And she said, why don't we ever talk about all these developers, artists, designers who work on the Squarespace platform that you can go and you can hire? They have a whole page dedicated to them. She's hired a great team, very affordable cost, to help her not just do the design, but the content on the site. Squarespace is an ecosystem. If you're a developer, take a look at this. You get full control over the HTML, the CSS, the JavaScript. You've got a JSON API, so you have access to the underlying content management system. You can start with, of course, one of those beautiful templates, but they also have a base template that gives you the functionality without any design. So you can add your own. Once you register as a developer and flip that developer toggle, you can even use Git and SFTP. Code locally. Upload it. It's amazing. Mobile built-in, commerce built-in. You get a free domain name with an annual purchase. I just think you have to try it. And, of course, it's easy to try. There's my site. I started with a cover page. So I got a little slideshow of pictures. And, every once in a while, I'll get another great picture, and I'll add it into the slideshow. And that's the first thing a user sees. But that also has links to all my social presences. That has links to my photos. I have an event calendar, a blog. So, yeah, if you say, well, Leo, are you going to be at NAB? You can go to leoville.com and see the event calendar. It's all there. I just added that one though, with Paul and Mary Jo at the meetup. Yeah, it's kind of a little bit later on. Anyway, I shouldn't be touting my own site. The point being, this was easy to do on Squarespace. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK when you buy. You'll get 10% off, but it's free to try right now. Squarespace.com. And don't forget that offer code to save 10% on your new site. Let's see. I don't know where we want to go. Oh, yeah, I mentioned. So Apple, apparently, Project Titan we all heard about. And Tim Cook said, look, we're a big enough company. We can have, 1,000 people working on a project that we're just trying out to see how it fits, like our car project. So don't assume we're going to do cars just because we have 1,000 people in Project Titan. But Titan's just the first of the mythological Greek figures that might give you some insight into what Apple's up to. They've been quietly buying and leasing buildings throughout Sunnyvale, naming them after Greek figures. One of the largest is codenamed Rhea, which 9to5 Mac points out is one of the Titans. Oh, in Greek mythology. This is the one that has a lot of security and is making a lot of noise in the middle of the night. Clang, clang, clang. It's furthermore, documents filed with the city include areas like lube bay, tire changer, wheel balancer. There's a building codenamed Medusa. It's a manufacturing facility in Sunnyvale. The plans for this building show areas dedicated to a vision lab and eye tracking.
Clearly not a Titan. Why isn't it called Kronos? These people, that's the worst.
If only they would keep to their naming convention.
We have a theme, people.
But remember, Medusa was you cut off her head and another 10 appear?
That was a Hydra. Medusa turned you to stone.
Look at her.
Yeah. So many stone-changing animals in Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. They had a real phobia about that.
How about Magnolia? It used to be a FedEx facility, and it contains something called, as every company in Silicon Valley should have, a regenerative thermal oxidizer.
Totes.
I don't know. 9to5 Max says that's a machine used in manufacturing that can reduce pollution. Zeus is a former research lab in San Jose that will be used as a, quote, interim lab by Apple and house researchers.
Security also a big deal at this building. It is surrounded by a fence that blocks not just people from climbing in, but people from even looking inside. It is, get ready for this, 290,000 square feet. I don't, it's kind of unimaginable. Athena, which will undergo a lengthy facilities closure process. These are all, I guess, I gather 9 to 5 Mac is getting these all from the Sunnyvale planning department.
Well, there was a link in the article to, I forget where, but there was a report in one of the local papers or local journals about it.
Yeah. Apple's leased a former Pepsi plant for Project Titan.
Do they want to make sugar water or do they want to make a car?
Isn't that funny? There's a little irony in that. Of course, Steve Jobs lured PepsiCo marketing chief John Sculley from Pepsi saying, you want to make sugar water or you want to change the world? Now they own the facility. That's good. That's called enterprise. This comes from the Silicon Valley Business Journal and a little bit of enterprise research. This is what they're doing. And if you go to the Silicon Valley Business Journal, you can see the slideshow of all these tilt-ups, ugly buildings. This is the problem with the South Bay, is everything is a square tilt-up.
I mean, I love this stuff because I love code names. I love Greek mythology, but a lot of it, like, it doesn't really mean anything right now.
Yeah.
It's just stuff we can talk about until one day we have a car event.
This is Aria, 62,000 square feet on Scott Boulevard. Apple is
not to be confused with the Las Vegas area.
Installing stepper tools. So this would be perhaps a semiconductor manufacturing facility. 127,000 square foot facility on Patrick Henry Drive. It's called Pegasus. They wiped out the entire interior last year. And they filed permits to create new testing and mechanical rooms. And here's Medusa, the vision tracking. Wow. A chemical list submitted to the city includes everything from turtle wax, bug and tar remover, and Bondo body filler to Purell. Sounds like they're building cars in that one.
A night automated roving robot.
Bondo.
Maybe they're just doing a new reality series for the Discovery Channel.
We need turtle wax and we need more turtle wax and Bondo. Stat.
Fergie's gonna host a new car show on Apple Music is what's happening.
Guys, Burger King said that if we have the new theme laptop ready for their big unveil in 3 days, we get a $50,000 bonus. So I'm going to need you to do what you can.
We've licensed karaoke away from James Corden. He's going to show up with Adele and we need the car.
Pretty funny stuff. But this, you know, if you've never been to Sunnyvale or anywhere in this area, it's really, this is what it looks like. It's just this kind of this massive industrial park all over the place.
People are sometimes shocked that they go behind the scenes of the glitter factory and know it's actually a huge corporation with a lot of different manufacturing.
Not much glitter going on. Used to be prune orchards. Nothing but prune trees, which I guess are plum trees, right? The big mall in the area is called the Prune Yard.
Nice. That'll get you walking.
I used to work down there. I used to live in San Jose on Capitol Expressway. I used to live down there. And it just feels like it was all just built, kind of, you know. GarageBand now works with Music Memos and Logic Remote, and they've added 2,600 Apple Loops. This has gotten more and more powerful. GarageBand 10.1.1. I thought they updated, didn't they just? Oh, they updated in January for iOS, and now this is for the desktop. Is that it?
I think they did both, and this is the 0.1 update.
Okay.
They went to 10.1 previously.
Man. Great day to be a musician, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Nice stuff.
Well, Music Memos is to your point about the pencil, or Andy's point about the pencil, is it just lets someone like Taylor Swift sketch out a song really quickly so they don't forget what they were working on, and then they can move it over to GarageBand or Logic or Pro Tools or something and make a real song out of it. But it helps you get that idea in your head down somewhere so you can stop worrying about forgetting it.
That's so funny. So I'm reading that story, and I see Jason Howell's face pop up in the Google Drive. He obviously said, oh, let me find out. Jason, of course, is a musician as well as our host of Android and All About Android and TNT. I saw you, Jason.
All the loops.
His face goes boop. It's kind of fun in Google Drive. You can see who's in the doc. And all of a sudden, Jason shows up. Thank you for listening, Jason. We appreciate it. So, see that? This just appeared suddenly. Apple's Mac lineups will see significant graphics upgrades. Well, I would expect so, according to Mac rumors. Intel's abandoning TikTok, so Apple will also abandon TikTok, right?
Yep.
That's just what comes with the action. It's one of the reasons we're all waiting with bated breath to see what the new MacBooks, the new Skylake stuff will do. Will there? Okay, let me ask about, as long as we're talking about this, what about Macintoshes, the desktop version? First of all, the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Do you think they sell any of those?
A few. I mean, Alex Lindsay keeps buying three a week.
Does he?
Like that.
there's still a certain level of firepower you can only get with a Mac Pro. I don't know anybody who loves it. They just buy it because they can't get away with anything else.
The 5K iMac is obviously a jewel.
Yeah.
I mean, that
yeah,
is
if you need massive parallel computing, though, it's a really good choice.
Right, you get to get the Xeon.
Not everybody needs that. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's a very specific market.
Yeah.
And that market particularly doesn't really like the non-upgradability of it. They would very much like a giant tower case they could put 100 hard drives in and extra GPUs and all that stuff. And so
Apple's not innovating. Oh my God, they innovated.
I mean, the wrong innovation, frankly. Yeah. Skylake's got, I mean.
And we got Kaby Lake coming out too, Leo.
I know. They're going to be behind.
No, it depends on what chips you get. Yeah. So do they make the right chips available and when and what's the schedule? And
yeah.
It's a bit of a mess. This whole 14 nanometer has been a bit of a mess.
Maybe it's Intel's fault. It's certainly true that Microsoft has stumbled a little bit because of the Skylake hardware that they've made. So maybe that's part of it.
Apple's a patient company. I mean, I know it frustrates us, but they'll just look at it and they'll go, that's not the right chip. And Intel's will say, well, that's the chip we made. And they'll just say, that's not the right chip. And then they'll wait. And we'll get super frustrated because no new MacBook. And they'll be like, make us the right chip.
Reddit releases a official Reddit app for iOS. They bought Alien Blue, but this is apparently a completely new code base. And short on the heels of that, Apple removes all the other third-party Reddit clients because they're not safe for work. You just noticed? Neither is Safari, by the way. You can surf to any site.
Including Reddit.
Including Reddit. I don't understand.
There's actually a subreddit called Not Safe for Work. How is this news? Some of them extremely not safe for work. Not safe for your home. Not safe for justice. It's just not safe. It's okay.
And I know it's popular to pile on Apple review, and there's certainly a lot of reason to pile on Apple review on occasion, but this makes very little sense to me. Like, if we take this as a story, like App Review woke up one day and said, oh no, there's not safe for work on Reddit, destroy everything. That makes very, very little sense to me. So I'm wondering what the actual story is here, because it's also very coincidental that the new Reddit app launched right before this happened. So whether that was just an awakening point or whether that elevated Reddit, like maybe Apple hadn't been paying much attention and now Reddit's a premier partner the same way that other major social networks are a premier partner, and that caused a whole bunch of people who never paid attention before to start paying attention or something else was going on behind the scenes. I don't know, but the linear narrative to this makes no sense to me.
Does the Reddit app, official app, does it have the NSFW toggle?
I believe they're removing it. I believe it did and they're removing it.
So there is no NSFW content in the Reddit app, official Reddit app?
Right now, I believe there is.
It's so confusing. So 9 to 5 Mac talked to somebody who does Eggplant, which is one of the third-party clients. He reached out to Apple, was told he needed to remove the NSFW toggle within his app as well as all NSFW content. Now, his app, by default, had NSFW content, not, by the way, if you're puzzled, not safe for work, dirty stuff. He had his dirty, that's kind of an old-fashioned word, smutty, even more old-fashioned. All the smut was disabled, but there was a switch that would re-enable it. Apple says it's in their response, it's not appropriate to display pornographic content. They're such a nanny.
Well, it's funny because like Chrome, like they can't ask Google Chrome browser to stop showing, you know, not safe for work content. And there's no button. It feels to me like if that button never existed, this wouldn't be an issue. But since that button was there, like, oh, well, you could just leave it off permanently.
Reddit was asked to update the two apps it's responsible for, Official Reddit and Alien Blue, to remove the Safe for Work browsing toggle, but not the actual content. Now I'm really baffled.
Yeah.
So
Over the years, I get the impression that there's sort of an automatic or procedural way that certain apps get kicked out, but then there it gets one level up to actual humans who have actual authority who will say, "Oh, okay, no, this clearly is not what we were trying to ban against."
Well, the toggle was put in on Apple's request, by I might add.
But that's okay. That's definitely keeping in the spirit of their ability to simply say be able to flip a switch and make this thing kid safe. So I'm sure that you'll be able to get to NSW and not safe for work content,
and just browser app.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that it's not so much smut. It's easier to say things that most workplaces would not find appropriate for that kind of viewing, or things that might not be appropriate for young people to take a look at.
Things even Renee wishes he could never see.
And this is why he's Apple. I mean, Android. We were asked to update. This is Reddit's official response. We were asked to update our apps to remove the Safe for Work browsing toggle. This is a feature we previously refined with Apple's help. We were surprised by the notice. We've just resubmitted our build. We were not informed that Apple would be removing other apps, and we're very upset to see they did. Honestly, if we were interested in getting rid of third-party apps, which we are not, this would be the stupidest possible way to accomplish it. We suggest all third-party apps similarly remove settings for safe for work browsing. What is Apple accomplishing with this besides...
It's not Apple. It's a couple people in review. And
they work for Apple and they have the power.
Yeah, no, totally. But, you know, this will probably get escalated to again, it makes zero sense to me. This to me, I don't know how anyone looking at this would say this makes sense. So I'm suspecting that this will be handled.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it will. Also, Apple always does. But this happens again and again, this kind of weirdness.
Exactly. Yeah, you would think that they would figure out what the bottlenecks are in the system and improve the system, because it's not as though there's a shortage of reasons why a lot of developers are annoyed with Apple and the difficulty of dealing with Apple's approvals process. And so this is clearly a sticky part of the process that they really need to mop up.
We just have an escalation like, oh, we're going to change an app that is a major social network. Maybe we'll fly this up the flagpole first.
What would be a good way... So I understand and I appreciate Apple's desire to offer a family-friendly platform. But the problem, of course, is you become a censor. And there's no way to do that without completely censoring the internet. So, in fact, Apple is not a family-friendly platform. It's just not. You can surf on a browser to anywhere you want on any Apple device. So why do this? Just drop it. Or have a filter built into all Apple products that censor out adult content.
Well, they say the web is their secondary platform for open content, that if you want to use the App Store, then you're abiding by the guidelines of the App Store. And if you don't, then they make it as best a possible web platform experience for you to build outside the App Store content on.
Also, the default position of all censorship has always been it's really super easy and super safe to say no. It's easier to block, and then if someone objects, put it back in and apologize and say, oh, this wasn't meant to be blocked. But Apple's not the only company that's had problems with this. Remember the problems that Facebook had, where people can't people who are breast cancer communities can't share pictures. They can't, in some cases, they couldn't even speak about their own bodies without being censored by Facebook, because there's a bot that flags things as adult content and won't let things go. There's a really wonderful website called be prepared to giggle, but it's called Oh Joy Sex Toy. That is one of the most brilliant. It's a cartoon site that is one of the most brilliant educational sites for sex education for people of all ages. And that's the sort of thing that would be easily banned, even though it's nothing but helpful. I actually kind of a hysterically funny example of this, where I've been taking a lot of photospheres using the Android camera app, where that's where you stay in one place and you basically can cover a 360-degree sphere and it'll be assembled by Google servers. And then you can have this sort of virtual reality sort of 360 experience. And I've been finding in art museums that sometimes things might not line up, or there might be people moving around, and so there might be little ghosts or things like that. But this is not what's been happening. I've been seeing that there's been what looks like a deliberately blurred section and blurring out certain parts of certain sculptures that are just like 1904 things that are being in a Gallery 700 at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I'm wondering, is there a censorship feature built into this that anytime it sees like breasts or butts, it's going to try to censor that stuff out? And I've been making inquiries at Google and I have not received a response yet, but it's the sort of problem that it's easy to say no and make sure that and avoid. It seems as though there you'll create bigger problems for yourself as a company if you let adult content through than if you censor it and then simply say, oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't supposed to happen.
I think the problem is the best you can achieve is half censorship, which is probably nothing but just confusing people.
Well, look at an Instagram feed. I mean, Instagram bans what it believes is nudity, but like, there's still all sorts of wacky stuff on Instagram and things.
Well, apparently somebody on Instagram decided butts were okay because all of a sudden, Instagram's just full of butt pictures.
You can have a topless man, but not a topless woman.
Which is, it's worse. Just either let everything or let nothing.
Yeah. It's actually having, I think, a bad impact on society. When groups in New York started to say, well, look, it's actually not illegal for women to go around shirtless, cops have to be informed that it is okay for women to sunbathe nude or even just to take off their tops because it's hot outside and a lot of other people are taking off their tops. And so my growing up in a Puritan fishing colony in the 70s and 80s, like, oh my goodness, why would you want to be naked, topless? And then I had to start, wait a minute, the only reason why this seems like a really weird thing for women to do is because I've always been told this is a weird thing for women to do, and realize that actually it's stupid to just like. In warmer months, you can see women who are dressed very, very comfortably, appropriately for. And I walk past and I don't gawk and I don't think it's weird for people for a woman to be walking around in a sports bra. Imagine like in 1920 it would just be nothing but ogling because
right. I can see like, her ankle.
And I think about things like this, and I think about if we stop programming our kids to think that nudity is something shocking and something to be ashamed of. And it's always going to be a problem. I think that's a contributor to a lot of the really horrible attitudes that society has towards women and towards other groups.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like we've seen what happened in Japan where they started pixelizing various bits, so then tentacles became the thing. I mean, this is just the path to insanity.
Yeah.
Pornography will find its way through.
Well, I mean, if you want to be a general purpose computing platform, it's kind of. I mean, there's no nudity on Twitter. I managed to handle that.
We can fix that right away. Come on.
It's inside the clothes, Leo, underneath all these clothes.
but we're not we aren't trying to show you a full, we're not a fully functioning web browsing platform. It's an easy thing to do.
And to be clear, I mean, when Not Safe for Work doesn't just define pornography. There's all vast categories of things on Reddit that Apple's probably not wanting to be displayed in apps that will then have a
But that's the funny thing is they are in the apps.
Yeah.
And all their...
It's a mess, Leo.
It's a mess. I don't even know why I care about it. Here's a keyboard you should not install, the Hub keyboard for iOS.
I feel bad for Microsoft these days.
What a dopey idea this was. Apparently, it's a keyboard that doesn't just type letters. It types applications. Why wouldn't you want that? It integrates with Office.
For Excel.
It integrates with Office 365. So you can search through your contacts and documents and share them wherever the keyboard is present. I don't know. Just don't install it. It's really ridiculous.
Well, remember that the great thing about customizability is that you don't have to create a keyboard that makes sense for everybody. But if it makes 8 people think, oh, my God, this makes my work, my day so much faster and better, then it's worth it.
I guess.
It's
no problem for me if you want to put this in there. It seems dopey.
I think as a piece of general news, though, it's a really great indication of exactly how deep Microsoft's commitment is to iOS. They created it's maybe not quite so much of a surprise that they created such great Microsoft Office apps for the MacBook Pro and for iOS 9, but the fact that they're going to say no, we're even going to do a really weird custom keyboard for phones that makes our products much much easier to use. They're not just simply ticking off a checkbox on a product grid. They really do feel as though iOS is a place where they want to be.
Well, I should point out this came out for Android first, but
he's going to have to. It's easier. Yeah.
And this is, we should say, from Microsoft Garage, which means it's like one of their experiments. It's an interesting experiment. I installed it on Android and immediately installed it. I'm not going to talk about the iPhone 7. This is way too early to start doing rumors to the iPhone 7, right?
Minute after the 6S is introduced, Leo, you have to start talking about the iPhone 7.
How is the SE going? Is this, I think it's selling well. My just kind of...
The 5S was selling remarkably well when Tim Cook gave those numbers out at the show.
Right, 30 million.
Wow.
The people who've been waiting for this absolutely love it, and because they've had no alternative to a smaller iPhone. And again, it's not a, as we've been talking about, it's not a chopped down version of the iPhone 6. It's just smaller, and that's pretty much it. So yeah,
some are reporting, according to 9to5. I'm sorry, according to Mac Rumors, that there are issues with Bluetooth phone calls when the smartphone is paired with a vehicle or wireless headset. As some are also saying the same thing with GPS voice navigation.
I've tried. I don't have a Bluetooth car, but I've tried with headsets, and Lori Gill has one and Daniel Bader has one, and none of us could replicate the issue. But that doesn't mean anything. There's so many of these things, and they're so complicated now that even if 3% of people have it, that can be thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's right. Exactly. Or 1%.
And not unusual for a new phone. It's, if it's still a problem in 3 or 4 weeks' time, then it's a bigger problem.
But. Yeah. Are you using the SE as your daily driver, so to speak?
I have been, because I really wanted to give it, when I get a review unit, I don't want to just do, like, I do a quick take for people who really want to buy it that day, but then I try to live with it for a while and talk about battery life and talk about any issues. And it's small, Leo. I mean, like, using that keyboard, looking at that little screen, I really miss 3D Touch. I use 3D Touch a lot on the iPhone 6S, and now I find myself trying to pop and press and get trackpads and things, and it's like I have not been trolled this badly by Apple ID since there was no Touch ID on the original iPad Air, and it would take me 3 seconds every time to remember there was no Touch ID and then unlock it. So I go to do something and I realize, it doesn't work this way and I have to do it a different way. But other than that, I mean, it's a great little phone, and whenever people have seen it, and Apple smartly gave me the rose gold version because it draws attention.
I like
it. Everyone knows
rose
it's gold. A new phone. They're like, that's such a great little pocket phone.
Yeah, I got the rose gold iPad as well. Does that look
so
pink?
Nice.
Own the pink. Pink is a great color.
They go and the audience goes, yeah, it looks pink. Does this phone make me look girly? I like pink. What's wrong with pink? Pink used to be a boy's color in the turn of the century, right?
It's light red, Leo.
Light, very, very light.
Oh, no, it's own the pink.
Own the pink.
I bought my first article of pink clothing last year during that horrible winter because I needed some damn color in my life. As soon as I put on that pair of pink socks, I realized that I'm an idiot. Why do I not buy?
It's a great color.
Why is this the only color that I don't? Again, it's like you are programmed as a kid that this is not a boy's color. You're not supposed to wear pink. Fight
it's
the
so
hegemony.
Miami Vice. Miami Vice.
As a good preppy, I've worn pink shirts for years.
What about did you put the shoulder tied sweater, Leo?
Yeah.
Pink shoulder. Yeah.
And I run through the house saying, tennis, anyone?
Biffy, Buffy,
time for some bloodies.
The 2016 Dockers are out already. To the Gap.
The Dockers are here.
We're not a republic.
The new, I'm sorry, I only wear Lacoste, but thank you very much.
Lovey.
Lovey. Let's take a break. Come back with your picks of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Inaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. And if you are in the market for a new iPhone or a new iPad, perhaps you should know about Gazelle.com, a great place to sell your old gadgets, get cash in hand to buy the new gadget. Gazelle is now providing financing for buying. So you see, they buy and they sell. So I guess I should start with sell your stuff. Go to Gazelle.com. And they buy all kinds of used electronics, not just phones, tablets, even broken tablets, even tablets from Microsoft and Samsung and Google. They also will buy Apple computers and iPods. They're one of the few places where you can get some money for a broken iPhone or an iPad. But the stuff that's not broken, the stuff that works nice, they offer for sale. So a great time to buy a new device is when there's a new device on the market. You can go to Gazelle.com, and lots of people have unloaded their old device, and you can get a great selection of iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, iPads. They even do Galaxy phones for you weirdos. They provide financing, too. They've signed up with a worked a partnership with a firm. So you can do this actually at checkout. You just click the button that says financing with a firm, provide some basic information. You'll get instantly approved and have a chance to pay it off at 3, 6, or 12 months. So this really makes it very easy. And nowadays, because phones are so expensive and the companies have abandoned their subsidies, this is really kind of needed. Financing with a firm now for anything you buy, and it's very easy and fast to do. They also offer a 12-month warranty for cell phones and iPads powered by Assurant Solutions. That covers water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects, and more. And they offer 24/7 help to process claims and return your device. So there's really no reason not to go to Gazelle to sell or to buy or to do both. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. They even have a referral program that gets you an extra $10 when you refer a friend. Tell your friends and make sure they mention that they heard about it on MacBreak Weekly. Gazelle.com. Time for our picks of the week. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. I pick Renee Ritchie to start.
All right. So a couple picks, but they're super related. First of all, Apple finally, I'll use the internet vaunted, finally announced standalone Hermes watch bands. So if you've been eyeing a Hermes watch band for a while.
I knew you'd jump on that one.
you can get, I'm wearing the cuff right now. So you can get a Hermes cuff.
Actually, that's pretty.
Yeah, it's only available in this color, but if you have a smaller watch, the 38 millimeter, and you like the double tour, or you have a 42 millimeter and you like the single tour, you can get them in a wide range of colors, like feu, which is orange. It's a French word for fire, and a whole bunch of other colors. They're all up on Apple's page now. If you don't get the watch, you don't get the Hermes watch face, but if you have a Hermes watch and you want other Hermes bands, or you have your existing watch and you just want to add a little bit of Hermes leather, and for some people, these are exorbitantly priced, but if you've ever seen what actual Hermes bands cost, these are ridiculously low priced for Hermes. So it exists in this weird netherworld. If you don't want Hermes, Apple has a bunch of new leather bands available.
And yes, you own them all! Oh my God.
Well, these are review units, so these I didn't actually buy. These are the ones that I'm going to be reviewing.
But he will be buying
I will
soon.
I will be buying some of them. And they have great new spring colors available. So here's the marigold and the red and the sky blue and the navy. These are still, you know, a little bit pricey, but they're nice leather bands. And if you know, to Andy's point previously, I hope they don't change the size of that lug anytime soon because I'll have to remortgage at that point.
Yeah, they can't do that, right? They've got to keep the lug.
Especially now that they're releasing, I mean, they released new bands in September, they released new bands in March. I mean, if they keep releasing new bands, to me, that's a good indication. You can never say never with Apple because they ditched the floppy and they'll ditch my lug one day too.
Yeah.
But I feel confident that for a while still, I bought actually a lot of the woven nylon bands. I got one for my mom. I got one for a friend of mine. They're all really, really nice. I got my sister for her birthday the new red modern buckle, and she really loves it. So there's a really nice, and it changes the entire look of the device, which is, you know, we don't really appreciate that from a watch or sorry, from a phone or a tablet standpoint. But because you're wearing it all the time, you can change that little bit of color, and it really does give you like a totally fresh new look without changing the hardware, resetting everything.
I noticed with the nylon bands, the lug is colored as well as the band, so you get a little trim. What color should I get?
I forget what the pink one is called. I have the pink one. My mom has the marigold
Talking
one.
Talking about embracing the pink.
I was wearing the black stainless steel watch, and the pink and black is just so breathtaking I had to go for it.
I can't decide. That's why you have
so many.
The
pink and black attack. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I always go for the like boring, like the pearl. That's boring.
Georgia has the black one, and it's really nice.
Is it nice? But I have a silver. I have a stainless. Does she have stainless?
No, she has the
black with black.
Space gray, yeah.
Yeah, or black with
gray. The
Darth
Vader look.
Yeah. But she's, you know, she's, Maybe I'll get this. This would fit my preppy lifestyle.
And it's a nice splash of color, Leo. It's like having those pink socks. They just, like, you know it's there.
But you know what? I came here not for this, but for the Hermes cuff.
Yeah, April 19th.
April 19th. Oh, it's not on the site yet.
Yeah, well, it'll be available. They have the bands up. If you go to the Hermes section of the Apple Watch store,
you have to go to a special section.
Well, Leo, I mean, it's like it's business class, right? You don't want to be mingling with the other bands. But they have some really nice colors there. There's a turquoise blue. There's a turquoise blue, a reddish orange,
What's your favorite band?
I love this cuff. I mean, I wear it almost all the time. I like the new Melanez too, but it's
it looks so manly.
It's Fire Leo.
F. You know, in English, F just sounds dumb.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, it's a French company, so all their names are like the Favre is, I think, beige.
Oh, Favre.
And Cappuccino is the original red color.
Where do I, how do I find the Hermes section?
So if you go to apple.com/watch and there'll be a Hermes.
Oh, yeah, here it is. It's in the Hermes. View models and pricing come into our very exclusive special section.
Oh, Monsieur Lapo.
The website. Oh, welcome. We have done a credit check on you and you will be allowed to purchase one and only one.
It's like Pretty Woman. Big mistake. Huge. And you go back up each and show.
Are you going to be camping out in front of the Apple store to be first in line to get the new band?
No.
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 I don't even know if they'll be like at many, because Hermes is not available at a lot of retail outlets right now. You have to, there are a few in every major city, but mostly I think you're going to be ordering them.
Yeah. And it looks like I can't order the cuff. Unless, is this going to bring me back out with the plebeians if I shop bands?
Yeah, maybe hit that again and see if you can see the Hermes.
Now that otherwise, I'm in the Hermes section, will I stay? No. See, I've gone back to these people with their nylon bands. I don't even wear the Apple Watch. What am I buying a band for? Mr. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
My pick is actually kind of a revisit of something that someone else picked a couple of months ago. Jason Snell keeps talking about how he uses... Oh good God! Am I still
yeah,
on?
You look good. The picture quality is superb.
All right, at least I got my mouth open and I've got a goofy expression on. But yeah, he's been editing podcasts and audio with this really great iOS app, Ferrite Recording Studio. And so it was actually when he was on the iOS Daily with you a couple of weeks ago, they actually walked through what it's like to edit audio using this app. And so I gave it another try. I've now edited a podcast with it, and I really, really am starting to get into it. I didn't get into it when he first recommended it because I didn't see him use it. It's it's not only is it powerful enough to do multi-track editing and the sort of thing where you've got three different voices, three different recordings, and you just need to cut out the ums and the erms and switch from one recording to another as you as the conversation moves around. I also love it because it really is an aggressively iOS app, where the developers have decided that, do we want to make this thing so fast and so powerful that you can get through really, really complicated editing things really, really quickly, or do we want to make it easy to use the first time you're using it? A lot of it is hidden. A lot of the features are hidden underneath the hood, where you've got to double tap and you've got to drag with like two fingers and three fingers. But once you figure out what the language of this app is, it really is, you can get things done super, super lightning quick and with a minimum of on-screen clutter. To get this, it's not stuff that you would figure out without looking at a tutorial video or watching Jason actually edit using this thing. But if you imagine how many buttons and how many pull-up menus you'd have to put onto the screen in order to do that same sort of thing, you either got to have a mouse or you got to have all these double tap and triple tap sort of things. So really, really happy with it. They're charging real money for it, which they should do. It's like $30 plus $40 plus whatever. The actual download is free, but to make it into a really professional tool, it starts getting into a little bit of money. But that's okay because it is a professional tool that will save you time. And I can make another $30. I might not get another 45 minutes today in order to get this job done. And one more, if it's one more professional tool that lets me use my iPad Pro instead of taking my MacBook someplace, that's cheap money.
Very nice. Yeah, I downloaded it too when Jason mentioned it, the Ferrite Recording Studio. I feel like the iPad Pro now, I'm not going to use it. It's not replacing my laptop. But I have to say, if for creating content, it is actually really a nice tool.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not missing it at all when I'm out and about with it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to a family wedding next week. I have at the very last minute asked to shoot the ceremony, and now I'm thinking how confident am I that I can use my iPad Pro for everything I'd use my notebook for? I'm not sure that but the fact that I'm even thinking about taking an iPad with me to at least get a rough cut of a wedding video done, like the night during the wedding reception or shortly after, shows you how much faith I have in iOS and the iPad Pro.
Yeah, pretty cool. My pick is something we discovered yesterday on iOS Today. We had been talking a lot about the fact that the new iPad supports Ethernet. And a lot of people told me, oh, no, it's always supported Ethernet. You just had to have a powered hub. That was the issue, was enough power. But you also had to use Apple's Ethernet adapter. And we played around a little bit, and we found an Ethernet adapter that also works. And this is from another company I love, Anker. So if you want to add Ethernet to your iPad, of course, you're going to have to get the Apple camera. They still call it the camera connection kit, the new one that has USB 3 and it has power and it has a USB dongle. And then you're going to want to get this. Now, Apple charges $30 for their Ethernet dongle. Anker makes actually arguably a nicer one. It's aluminum body and it's $20. It's less expensive. And we verified that this does in fact work. In fact, we own a few of them. John said, oh, yeah, take a few. You can get it on Amazon. And they make – I haven't tried the other ones, but they make other things as well. Like this would be really cool.
That's one that I have. I bought that.
Does that work with your iPad?
It does work if you have power plugged into it.
Right.
Although you do have to be pretty conservative about the other things you plug into those other three USB ports. I wouldn't use it be careful.
So this is, and it's not designed for the iPad, but now Andy has verified it's the unibody aluminum 3.0 to RJ 45 gigabit Ethernet adapter plus three USB ports. It's $26.
Also high speed for the iPad.
Yeah, the USB 3. Yeah. So that's for the big pro, right? The little pro doesn't do the high speed, unfortunately. Yeah, that is really great. I can't really think that you should. It would be advisable to have multiple USB dongles plugged into it.
My battery life is terrible. I hate Apple.
but we realize we're also talking about iPad Airs here, and we're talking about other devices too.
Right,
so.
Pretty nice. Yeah, so actually I have the USB-only one, but I'm thinking of spending a little bit more and getting the USB plus three ports, Ethernet plus three ports.
Well, that new camera connector for the iPad, though, that new Lightning connector, that was the sleeper hit of the last event. That's like it's a game changer practically.
Do you use it on your smaller the Junior? Do you have a Junior? I can't remember. Or are you only on the big? You only have the big one.
I have a loaner iPad Pro Mini, but I don't. But my daily carry around is my personal iPad Pro.
And we tried a number of batteries, although I haven't tried a higher power battery pack. You really need to plug it into the wall, into the mains, as they say.
I've had some success plugging into a really high capacity Anker. Yeah, but it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If I had if I've just taken 2 hours worth of wedding video and it's on an SD card, and if something happens to that card, I'm in a big sticky. I would probably want to plug it into a
Don't
wall.
Don't muck around with that one.
Exactly.
Somebody's stolen my. Oh, here it is. Oh, don't want to lose this. This is the most expensive piece of the whole equation. This is the $50 Apple camera connection kit. But once you have that, the sky's the limit.
Rocket ship to the moon, man.
To the moon. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. Always a thrill. Great
Thank
to have
you. I think it's finally about time for me to upgrade my OS from from Yosemite to something a little bit to the new one. I've been losing camera a couple of times, and my rule for the podcasting one is is it working? Yep, great. Then don't do anything.
Then don't mess
Why would
with
you
it.
Want to upgrade something that's actually working? But now it's not working. So this might be the last time I appear on the show if everything fails.
I love El Capitan. I have it everywhere now. It's great. No problems with it at all. Yeah. Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Andy, you've got Iannacco's Almanac on the 5x5 network. You've got, what is it called, Material?
Material on
Relay.fm.
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 Frequently on the Hamilton podcast.
On the Odd for Ham.
Odd for Ham.
You did three of them last week, I hear.
Yep.
Crazy people. And are you through the album yet?
No, I don't know. I'm not the only one doing it. The episode that I shot is finally at like the end of disc one. So I think that we're about above the over just over the halfway point.
It all gets very sad now, unfortunately.
Oh no, I'm sorry. The one we did is at the end of Act Two, just right before the presidential election. So yes, this is where Hamilton starts to shooting his mouth off, starts to become not a career or life lengthening sort of exercise.
But we couldn't really go through the show without one mention of Hamilton. So there you have it.
Exactly.
Renee's podcasts are many. Legion.
I've downsized.
What?
Leo. Yeah.
Now, how many do you do?
Not that many. I do this show, and I do the iMore show, and Debug and Iterate are the regulars.
All excellent.
Oh man. That I guess that happens when you go front office. Now you're just you just care about the comptroller and getting a better deal on the heating system.
Traveling has been killing me. It's like because it's hard to just record properly every place and set schedules. Yeah. And
so yeah. You're traveling more.
Yeah. I'll be in Winnipeg again next week, Leo. sunny Winnipeg.
Appearing at the beautiful Winnipeg Arena in all right. Thank you very much, all of yous, for being here. We love doing this show. We thank our great studio audience. We've had quite a number of people come and go. The show has been long enough that we've actually had babies born, people passed. It's awesome. Here comes a small child. If you want to be in the audience, tickets at twit.tv. Just email us. We'll be glad to put a place out for you. We'll be in the old brick house. I'm calling it the old brick house now. through the summer, and we'll be moving sometime in July, so or maybe August.
Awesome.
So if you want to come visit your brick, hie-thee hither.
I got a whole bunch of Amazon boxes I haven't taken to the recycler yet. If you need boxes,
we might need some boxes. We might need some
brick-sized boxes.
We also might need some dumpsters. Quite a few dumpsters. but
garage sale. Have a brick house garage sale.
We're going to have a garage sale. The problem, we got to do that, right, John?
Yeah.
I think just out front. We'll have to block off the street. Petaluma's Big Antique Festival is coming up next weekend. Maybe we could just take some of that space and do it now.
That's an antique audio interface.
It's called an Amiga.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
A radio toaster. This was
designed in George Bush's first term of office.
Tandy. Say it with me. Tandy.
Tandy. If you want to watch the show, you can do it live every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1800 UTC. But you don't have to watch live. We make on-demand audio and video available everywhere after the fact. On our website, twit.tv/MBW, but also on all the podcast apps. And, of course, there are wonderful Twit apps. We didn't write any of them. The Twit apps we wrote are in the basement along with a Tandy. But fortunately, we have some very accomplished third-party developers who've written a bunch of great apps, including Roku, Windows, Apple TV. There's now 5. There's a ton of it. So go check them out. Main thing I want you to do is subscribe so you get each and every episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time's over.